Iran's leader says recent riots in the country were not internal and spontaneous, and the role and interference of enemies is clear for all. Palestinians hold a massive funeral for a teenager killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil. North Korea test fires two strategic long-range cruise missiles, calling it another clear warning to the country's enemies. Hello, everybody. Very warm welcome to World News. And now, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has called on officials to remain vigilant and thwart plots being hatched by enemies to instigate riots in the country. Addressing members of the Expediency Council, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the role and interference of enemies in Iran is quite clear. Leader said the recent riots were not internal and spontaneous, but the enemy used its propaganda to influence minds and encourage rioters. He said Iran's move against the policies of global arrogance forces them, including some politicians in America and Europe, to react. Ayatollah Khamenei said Iranians have shown commitment to religious values and their initiatives foiled the enemy's plots. The leader emphasized that enmities will continue in various forms as long as the Iranian nation follows the path of the Islamic establishment. Tehran University professor Hakimeh Saghayeh Biria believes the West wages propaganda against Iran because the country is becoming strong and independent.
The West is basically diminishing in power and Asia is rising in power. So in this juncture, you would expect these sort of things happening, not only in Iran, but in other areas in Asia where you would expect this shift of power happening. So it is that, so with the propaganda, what do? You basically cover all these strengths that has been achieved over 40 years, despite the hybrid pressure, the hybrid war that has been going on, in different forms, beginning from the beginning of the revolution to now. So this is, I think, what is happening, that it is a reaction to that reality, that Iran has become a strong, independent nation.
New details are emerging about riots, acts of vandalism, and arson attacks that gripped the southeastern Iranian city of Zahedan. Details contradict anti-Iran propaganda portraying rioters as innocent. Now, footage and locals reveal that actually what happened on September 30th, a group of rioters gathered outside a police station close to the Grand Mosque where worshippers had gathered for Friday prayers. Now, rioters opened fire and resorted to other weapons at the police station. The locals say that police first restrained from taking action and fired shots into the air, but the armed rioters, incited by their terrorist leaders, broke into the station and opened fire at police.
I'm a law enforcement force officer. My colleagues and I were at the police station on Friday, September 30th, when the station was attacked. Rioters broke into the gates. I was shot and fell to the ground.
Police held the rioters back and defended themselves as they were seeking to seize the armory and take the station under their control. That left some casualties among the rioters. Iran has repeatedly said the rioting was hatched by foreign-backed terrorists with insurrectionary purposes. But some anti-Iran broadcasters have launched a propaganda campaign since. They've tried to distort the truth, claiming the worshippers inside the mosque were attacked. But one CCTV footage clearly shows rioters carrying the casualties into the mosque with the sole intention of fabricating what took place. The same day, rioters conducted other acts of vandalism across Zahedan, including setting fire to various public places. Muslim scholars from around the world have attended this year's Islamic Unity Conference. Annual event is a call for unity among Muslims as a solution to the crises that have gripped some countries in the region. Yusuf Jalali was there.
Delegates from over 40 countries are in Tehran to attend the 36th edition of the annual Islamic Unity Conference. Every year, Iran holds the event on Prophet Muhammad's birthday anniversary to provide a platform for Muslim scholars to sit and talk about brotherhood and unity. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi was also present in the conference. We are here in this conference to promote common understanding among Muslims from all nations. And the message of the conference to the enemy is that we seek to associate the life of modern humanity with religion.
Organizers say the annual gathering is held to remind Muslims that they share the same religion, and different denominations are only different ways of practicing the same belief.
Actually, we are not different on the principles. We are not, differing on the principles. As you've said, we have the same God, the Almighty Allah, and we have the same book, the same Qibla, all of us. Actually, the problem for us under different reasons. One of them is the interpretation of the text. Some, they go on their favor, the others on their go favor.
Delegates here see Palestine as a major axis of unity among Muslims. They believe unity is the only path for Muslims to end the Israeli occupation of Palestine and denounce some Arab leaders' normalization of ties with Tel Aviv.
It's no surprise to us that the House of Saud has teamed up with the Israeli regime. They claim to be Muslims, but in fact they are the puppets of the Israelis and do what Tel Aviv dictates to them.
The annual conference is organized by the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought. The event marks the Islamic Unity Week, which coincides with the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad.
Worshipping the same God, reciting the same holy book, and following the same prophet. Muslim scholars from different denominations here call on all their fellow Muslims to stay united based on their commonalities, as they believe division will only serve the interests of foreign players in the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's permanent mission to the UN has sent a letter to the Security Council about anti-Iran terror groups operating in northern Iraq. Letter says the country had to resort to military force to wipe out outfits as diplomacy did not end their presence across the border. Now, the letter explains reasons behind the recent strikes on the bases of the terror groups in Iraq's semi-autonomous region of Kurdistan. It highlights the destructive and chaotic actions of those groups against the Iranian people. Letter also notes that armed groups have been using Iraqi soil for more than 40 years to carry out terror attacks against Iran, despite warnings. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps targeted the terrorist hideouts with missiles in the Kurdistan region in late September. And a gas field in Iraq's northern Kurdistan region has been attacked by at least 8 Katyusha rockets. That's according to security and local Kurdish sources. Rockets fell in the vicinity of the Hormor gas field, which is one of the biggest in Iraq. Local officials said the attack did not result in casualties, nor did it affect the field's operations. No group has yet claimed responsibility. Gas field had come under similar attacks in the past. Hundreds of Palestinians have held a funeral for a teenager killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil. The Palestinian Health Ministry said 18-year-old Osama Mahmoud Adawi was shot in the abdomen during an Israeli raid on a refugee camp and later died at a hospital. Ministry said 3 other Palestinians were also injured during the raid. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians in the occupied territories. More than 100 have been killed in Israeli attacks so far this year. Now, North Korea says it's test-fired 2 long-range strategic cruise missiles amid heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula. North Korea's state media said the projectiles flew some 2,000 kilometers and hit their targets without specifying what they were. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un personally oversaw the test, hailing it as another clear warning to Pyongyang's enemies. Kim added the North has to expand its nuclear strategic armed forces to deter any crucial military crisis at any time. Pyongyang has carried out nearly 10 missile tests in the past 2 weeks, including one that flew over Japan. The North says the tests are necessary to countermeasures to joint military drills by the South, the U.S., and Japan. Pyongyang considers war games as a rehearsal for invasion. UK and France say they will provide Kiev with new air defense systems in the weeks to come following a recent massive missile attack by Russia. Britain says it will supply Ukraine with air defense missiles capable of shooting down cruise missiles to protect the country's critical infrastructure. London will also donate additional air defense missiles of other types, along with more drones and 18 howitzer artillery guns. And the French President Emmanuel Macron says Paris will provide Kiev with radar and air defense systems. He says the new military hardware will help Ukraine protect itself from drone and missile attacks. Russia carried out a huge missile strike against Ukraine Monday. Moscow said it was a response to last week's blast on the Crimea Bridge, which it blames on Kiev. French oil refinery workers are maintaining their strikes for a third week, leading the country into a fuel shortage. This was a topic earlier of our news review program.
In France, oil refinery workers have voted to continue their strike, despite a government order for some of them to go back to work amid a fuel shortage. The General Confederation of Labor, or CGT Union, representing the strikers, says that it will challenge the government order in the court. The industrial action over pay dispute, now in its third week, has taken 60% of French refining capacity offline. The walkouts have paralyzed 6 out of 7 fuel refineries, leading to fuel shortages at gas stations nationwide. The government has rolled out a requisition of essential workers, calling them back to work in a bid to get fuel supplies flowing again. The strikes worsened the energy crisis and inflation. France is already grappling with the impact of the Ukraine war. Let's bring in Carol Verik-Sin, a contributor at the Schiller Institute, joins us from Paris. We also have Mahmoud Rafat, president of the European Institute for International Law, who joins us from Stockholm. Welcome to you both. Carol, I'm going to first start with you there over in Paris. So tell us what's going on. How bad is this strike? How badly is it affecting Parisians' lives and French lives, for that matter?
Well, so far, it is astonishing, or rather not astonishingly, it is quite supported by the population. Well, indeed, yes, 30% of all gas stations, they are lacking one product or another. So people are it's becoming chaotic, but people feel that the fight against inflation, and that if these people are on strike, they have a legitimate demand to increase their wages, and if they fight, it's a good example for the others who will probably join this fight.
You have, Mahmoud Rafat, warning signs that are coming from a number of European countries, how they are now susceptible to social crises, to social unrest, to protests because of the cost of living crisis, which is not subject just to maybe people associating it just with the UK. It's now a European-wide problem, if not really something that the whole world is grappling with in a sense, but Europe in particular. So why not have a change of strategy when it comes what appears to be the roots of it, which is in the Ukraine conflict?
Well, first of all, let me highlight very important information. France, we call it the country of strikes. This strike is not something abnormal in France. Sometimes in France, the whole life get paralyzed for 1, 2, 3, and sometimes more than 4 weeks. The entire life is paralyzed by strikes. This is not something abnormal at all. France is number one worldwide in strikes. This is number one. And this is because of the strength of the federations, especially the worker federations, and because of their hard situation when it comes to the rights of their workers, or when they estimate their workers have been, the rights of their workers have been attacked somehow. This information, we need to take care of that, because that to lead us what's running in France. Which I want to say, what's running in France is a French specificity. It will not get extended to the rest of Europe on this level. Maybe we will see some symptoms of manifestations, of objections, of protesting against the huge change in the social life that Europe has been witnessing since last summer because of the Russian-Ukrainian war.
So let me get this straight. You're saying that you're saying that the strikes in France are a bit hyped up because France is a country that has more of a tendency to strike. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. And the point is, and at this point today, we have a president not coming from political background like the former presidents, for example, Chirac, Sarkozy, Mitterrand, etc. He's coming from investment banking background, which is making him very hard in front of the
okay.
men's.
Let's see what our guests there in Paris think. Carol, what do you think?
Well, it's true that there is a tradition since La Commune and the French Revolution that the French people have a sense of dignity. The problem here is that, contrary to in Germany, the discussions between the labor unions and the employers is the whole year. In France, to have a discussion, people have already to go on strike, to have an appointment with their boss to discuss about wages. So there is no real tradition of dialogue, and it is actually by going into the streets. The second point is that Total, which is the main operator in this case, they made huge profits. They don't pay taxes in France. They pay 25 billion of taxes, but not a penny in France. And they paid a huge amount of dividends to the shareholders. So people feel, because the oil workers, they're not the worst off. Their salary, it's between 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 euros. It's not the most poor people, but they are in a good fighting mood, and they know they have to take leadership. And it's most French people want a tax on the super profits of the super rich to pay. People don't want to pay for the embargo. They don't want to pay for the war. They don't feel that this is their war or their fault. So they say we should not pay, and the people who put us in this mess, they have to pay, not us.
We're just fresh out of time here, Mahmoud Rafat. I appreciate it. President of the European Institute for International Law. Kello Varikian, contributor at the Schiller Institute. Thank you very much from Paris. And with that, we come to an end for this news review.
And that's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
UK Prime Minister Liz Truss' popularity is lower than Boris Johnson's was at the nadir of his political career, and is the worst ever recorded. Meanwhile, she has claimed that Britain's economic problems were part of a global spike in inflation and energy prices. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. RT wrote, Britain's new leader even managed to surpass her predecessor's worst records, a poll has found. UK Prime Minister Liz Truss' approval rating sank to a new low of 47 in an Observer poll published recently. Her popularity is lower than Boris Johnson's, was at the nadir of his political career, and is the worst ever recorded by the British news outlet. According to the survey, some 64% of voters disapprove of the job Truss is doing, while only 16% approve, leading to an overall approval rating of 47 when rounded. Equally unpopular among Brexit supporters and opponents, a majority of voters, about 53%, think Truss should resign a mere month after taking office. Truss' this small approval rating comes despite the new PM delivering a keynote speech at the Conservative Party's annual conference in Birmingham last week. Such events usually give leaders a boost in the polls as they get a chance to explain their political platform to a receptive crowd. However, Truss's appearance in Birmingham came 2 weeks after Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng unveiled a mini-budget that provided for billions of pounds worth of tax cuts that led to the British pound crashing and the International Monetary Fund urging Truss to re-evaluate her plan, arguing that it would only increase inflation and inequality. Truss stuck to her guns, arguing that her economic plan is necessary to get economy growing and blaming Russia for the UK's floundering economy and cost of living crisis. The Prime Minister's approval rating is now lower than Boris Johnson's was at the height of the Partygate scandal, which led to his resignation in July. It is also lower than Theresa May's was in the weeks before her resignation in 2019, and is the lowest rating for a prime minister ever recorded by the Observer. Also, according to Global News, British Prime Minister Liz Truss said recently that she could have done a better job laying the ground for her package of unfunded tax cuts, but insisted she would push on with an economic plan that has caused turmoil on financial markets and weakened the country's public finances. Truss acknowledged that the UK faces a very turbulent and stormy time, but said her policies would lead to a high-growth, low-tax economy in the long term. The comments are unlikely to calm Truss' Conservative Party, which opens its four-day annual conference in the central England city of Birmingham amid plundering poll ratings and growing public discontent. Truss took office less than a month ago, promising to radically reshape Britain's economy to end years of sluggish growth. But the government's September 23rd announcement of a stimulus package that includes £45 billion in tax cuts to be paid by government borrowing sent the pound tumbling to a record low against the dollar. The Bank of England was forced to intervene to prop up the bond market, and fears that the bank will soon hike interest rates caused mortgage lenders to withdraw their cheapest deals, causing turmoil for home buyers. Truss told news outlets, "I have learned from that. I will make sure in future we do a better job of laying the ground." Truss stuck to her insistence that Britain's economic problems were part of a global spike in inflation and energy prices spurred by Russia-Ukraine crisis. In a bid to calm the market turmoil, Truss and her finance minister, Chancellor of Exchequer Kwasi Kwarteng, have said they will set out a medium-term fiscal plan on November 23rd, along an economic forecast from the Independent Office for Budget Responsibility. Many economists and many conservatives say that means weeks more economic turmoil are ahead. Michael Gove, who served as a senior minister in previous conservative government, said the announcement will have to be brought forward and some parts of the economic package will have to be dropped. Gove said there was an inadequate realization at the top of government about the scale of change required. Many conservative lawmakers are worried that a leader chosen to replace Prime Minister Boris Johnson for her boosterish promises of economic growth has set the party on course for defeat in the next general election, due by 2024. Opinion polls suggest the opposition Labour Party is opening up a substantial lead. Some delegates arriving for the conference in Birmingham were gloomy about the future of the party, which has been in power since 2010. Daniel Pitt, a party member from Erewash in central England, said, "I think it's going to be a rocky conference, definitely. The Prime Minister has to try and steady the ship." Truss said she would do what she can to win the hearts and minds of colleagues across the Conservative Party, but that doesn't appear to include changing course. Truss said she wouldn't ditch the most unpopular part of her economic package, a decision to scrap the top 45% rate of income tax paid on earnings above £150,000 a year. And she wouldn't say whether there will have to be cuts to welfare and public services to pay for lower taxes. As if the cabinet as a whole had decided on the cut to the top tax rate, Truss said no. It was a decision the Chancellor made. "I think there has been too much focus in politics on the optics or how things look," Truss said. She said she was confident her policies would get the economy growing by 2.5% annually, a target the UK hasn't hit for years. Labour Party economy spokeswoman Rachel Reeves accused the Conservative government of doing some sort of mad experiment with the UK economy and ignoring the anxiety and fear felt by millions of ordinary people. Reeves said, "The idea that trickle-down economy is somehow going to deliver the 2.5% growth we all want to see is for the birds."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us once again on this special episode of Muslim Lady. As always, I have the honor and privilege of being joined in the studio with my darling sister and expert, Sister Razia Shamli. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
I always get so excited whenever we are supposed to have discussions. I hope our listeners half as excited as I am about the things that we talk about, especially this episode, because the topic might seem repetitive, but the essence of it is something that we obviously cannot talk about enough.
Well, there are a lot of beautiful ahadith that tells us whom to avoid for marriage and whom to select for marriage. They actually give us criteria for marriage. Oftentimes, I've been a person who have like talked about this topic for so many sessions, marriage and criteria for spouse selection. And then at the end of the day, like if you really want to make something of the ahadith, they're so rich, but you have to analyze them. Like when it says, don't marry someone for someone's wealth or beauty, like if you really look at it from a scientific way, from a psychological way, from a spiritual way, from a material way. If you really analyze it, you can really understand what the hadith is trying to say, right? So, and sometimes the ahadith, for example, say, marry someone for their faith or piety, right? And this is something very general.
I mean, like, duh, obviously.
Duh, well, of course I'm going to marry. Or marry someone for their akhlaq. Yeah, of course, I have that. Everyone in the whole world knows that if you want, like the Muslims, if you want to marry someone, two very important criteria is akhlaq and religiosity.
Yeah.
What about akhlaq? What about religiosity? Where does narcissism come into the picture? Narcissism means that there is lack of akhlaq. There is lack of religiosity.
There's pretend akhlaq. With narcissists, there's pretend akhlaq.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, like when you really look into tangible, practical cases, then you really understand. And when you come across narcissists, you really get to understand the pain that they bring into your life. Mm-hmm. And then you really understand what akhlaq is all about. Right? What is narcissism? We talked about it in the previous session, but just I'm going to give you a very academic interpretation of narcissism so we can have our discussion. Sure. According to DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders,
yep.
All psychologists in the world, they will have to be up to date with the latest DSM. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that the latest DSM is DSM-5. Right? So according to the definition provided by DSM-5, narcissism is a pervasive pattern of grandiosity, a constant need for admiration, and a lack of empathy.
Yeah, I think I've met a few people like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and so important. One very important thing is that usually narcissism brings its pain in romantic relationships.
Yes.
And not so much in friendships.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a narcissistic friend, yes, you might encounter some problems, some challenges, but the pain and the misery and the cancer is started once you marry a narcissist.
So sad.
So, so sad. At least 5 of these criteria have to be present in a narcissist so that you could consider them, according to DSM-5, as a narcissist. 1, a grandiose sense of self-importance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very important.
I'm the center of the universe.
I'm the king of the world.
I'm the best thing that's ever happened to you.
Exactly. I don't know what you did that God gave me to you. I am everything. I have money.
Everything I have is the best.
Yes.
Even if I don't have anything.
Exactly. But they do have the best. Mm-hmm. They drive the best cars. They have the best houses. They go to the best vacations in the world. They work hard to have something because they want to be charming. And charm doesn't come with no price. They do their best to reach this charm. 2, a preoccupation with fantasies of unlimited success. Power, preoccupation of fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love. They do have some degree of power, brilliance, success, beauty, but subhanAllah, when you're with them, they act in a way, they present themselves in a way that you think, subhanAllah, they're the most handsome, beautiful creatures on the world because they believe it deep within. Number three, a belief that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or should associate with other special or high status people or institutions. I'm so special. They're so special that only a selected number of people are allowed to interact with them, to socialize with them. Their wives or their husbands have to be of a certain...
Trophy.
Their trophy wives or husbands. Four, a need for excessive admiration.
Oh, yes. Everyone has to clap and cheer for them. You're actually breathing, Masha.
That is super.
Yes, exactly.
Number five, a sense of entitlement.
Entitlement, yes.
I am entitled to the best food. I am entitled to the best car. I am entitled to the best accessories in the market. Next one, number six, interpersonally exploitative behavior. When they are in, when they're socializing with other people, they kill you with their charms. They attract you and they put the leash on over, of course, not everyone's, but vulnerable people who get attracted to them. They put the leash around them and then they exploit them in a beautiful way that they will kill them with the least amount of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And last one, a lack of empathy.
I thought a lack of responsibility would be on that list too. They don't take responsibility for any mistakes. It's never their fault.
Exactly. We're gonna go to that.
Yeah.
This is one of the
hallmarks of a narcissist.
Exactly. We're gonna go to that. But lack of empathy is like
they know how to pretend to be empathetic.
Yeah. That is true.
But that the wiring in their head does not connect to the empathy lobe.
Exactly. You know, sometimes I wonder if they actually see the misery that they're bringing to your life as their partner, but they are so preoccupied with their own
fantasies
of, you know, grandeur and like how high they are, that they don't really realize how much pain they are bringing into your life.
And even if they do, they most probably, number one, think it's your own fault.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they did something wrong, they'd say, see what you made me do?
Exactly. See what you made me do?
Exactly. And also, they thrive on the pain their partner goes through because of them.
Exactly.
Because it makes them feel more special.
Exactly. Exactly. Subhanallah, that I don't know how many women, how many Muslim women have experienced, you know, being with a narcissistic spouse in their life and what kind of hardships they have. But, you know, Zainab, at the end of the day, knowing that you are with a narcissist and the qualities of a narcissist, if you really become aware of these qualities, then you don't go around beating yourself up all the time. Oh my God, I'm not good enough.
True.
I didn't act well.
What did I do to deserve
it? I wasn't enough. What did I do wrong? Then you will realize that you're perfect, that there is nothing wrong with you, that the other person, that your spouse,
is
the cause of the problem. Just knowing that brings so much peace of mind to you and your life. You will know that you are the sane person. Of course, unfortunately, these people, the narcissist, bring so much misery into your life that ultimately they will drive you insane.
Yeah, they will.
They will really bring upon...
And then they will use that as a card against you. See, you were crazy all along.
You should see the...
you should see a therapist.
Therapist, exactly. See, I told you from the very beginning.
Exactly.
There was something wrong with you. I mean, I don't know why I'm living with you.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRB English Radio. We'll be back after a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
If you're a Muslim lady, and you're living with a narcissist spouse, one thing that you will realize is that you don't feel connected. What do I mean by you don't feel connected? The whole world revolves around them and their plans for life.
Uh-huh.
Right?
They're the priority.
They're the priority. And even when they're planning for the future of your joint life as a couple, everything goes according to their desires, according to how they decide that things should be.
Their preferences.
Their preferences. They don't even ask you, right? So you're nowhere in the picture. They're constantly bragging about themselves. They're constantly talking about their accomplishments. And
they're steering the conversation toward a direction that you can praise and talk about their accomplishment. In any way, they have to be the topic of conversation.
So, so true. And they rarely have any interest about your interests.
Yeah.
They don't even bother to ask themselves, so what do you think?
In the beginning, they do, though.
Yeah, at the very beginning, because they have to
they
show some charm.
You, yeah.
Exactly. So they don't even give a fig of, like, what you like to achieve in life, where you like to go in life, like, what kind of vacation you like to.
What are your goals and aspirations?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Nothing really matters to them. Of course, when you're deep in the relationship with them, at the very beginning, everything, as you said, they really try to make you, pamper you with their beautiful, loving words, with their romantic relationship. And as you said early in the program, you feel manipulated when you're living with a narcissist. What do we mean by that? You know, they act in a way that they somehow propose a threat to the romantic relationship that you have with them. Like, they don't really say it, if you don't this, I'm going to, like, end up this relationship with you. If you don't do this, I'm going to go with another woman. But in a very subtle way, they, through their gestures, because they're super professional in charms, right? They act in a way that you feel threatened that if I don't do this, that if I don't act in a certain way,
he's going to leave.
He's going to leave me. My relationship is going to come to an end.
They constantly keep you on your toes.
Exactly.
They like to have you in anxiety mode over losing them.
Exactly.
Because that makes them feel special.
And not only losing them, but sometimes you're living with them. They make sure that you are living with them, but then you lose their attention.
The silent treatment.
Yeah.
You
lose their love, cold shoulder.
Yeah,
they go. They leave you in, like, they leave the house in early in the morning without even telling you where they're going. When are you going to come for lunch? I don't know. I don't know. They're going to leave. You're just going to be left hanging in the air. Mm. They're with their friends. Obviously, people who like to, you know,
admire and praise
them all the time because you've stopped admiring them.
Right? They don't get what they want from you anymore for that moment. Or sometimes they just like manipulating you so that they can string you along.
Exactly.
You know? That's all the time we have for today's episode. Those were really some interesting facts, and I hope there was positive takeaway for all of our listeners. We've been talking about narcissistic spouses on this episode of Muslim Lady, and inshallah we'll continue it in the future. Until then, I leave you all in the care and protection of the Almighty.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Rates of anxiety and depression have decreased since first year of the coronavirus pandemic, but there are still aren't enough psychiatrists and therapists for millions of American patients. We now present you an article written by Eric Berger. The piece is titled, A Collective Trauma, COVID Keeps Its Grip on Mental Health of Many American Patients. Eric Wood, a mental health professional who leads virtual support groups for Indiana judges and attorneys, can look at a screen full of heads nodding in reaction to what someone said and know that the meeting is providing some relief for participants who have struggled during the COVID-19 pandemic. Eric Wood, who lives in Indianapolis, can also see how his wife, Diane Keller Wood, has made gradual improvements in her recovery from long COVID's significant effects on her mental and physical well-being. Eric Wood, a clinical case manager for the Indiana Judges and Lawyers Assistance Program, said, "This was probably me being more of a therapist than a husband, but I was really trying to get her to focus on the positive aspects and not to see everything with kind of a negative filter." He added, "And then eventually she started coming home from doctor's appointments saying, 'You know, I think I'm getting better.'" Still, Diane Keller Wood and the jurist, like millions of other Americans, have not fully recovered from the mental health problems connected to the COVID-19 pandemic and the surrounding societal upheaval over the last 2.5 years. While there are indications that at least among U.S. adults, the rates of anxiety and depression have decreased from the spike seen during the first year of the pandemic, they still remain higher than before COVID, and there still aren't enough psychiatrists and therapists. In short, while the pandemic is no longer the top story in the news each night, its ripple effects remain top of the mind for many Americans. Roxanne Cohen-Silver, a University of California at Irvine psychologist who has described the pandemic as a collective trauma, said, "In addition to those who died from COVID or lost a loved one to the virus, there are personal stressors that people have had to encounter on and off with restrictions in their activities, on and off with the possibility of getting ill. And all of those things have now been chronic." According to the National Center for Health Statistics, in 2019, 11% of American adults in the United States reported symptoms of anxiety and depression. In January of 2021, the number was 41%. A year later, it had fallen to 32%, which was still significantly higher than before the COVID pandemic. Before the pandemic, the Lawyers Association program operated monthly support groups for people struggling with problems such as addiction or grief. When much of the country entered lockdown because of the virus, the organization launched a weekly program, Connection Group, to help people grapple with their isolation. Wood said, "We have got some folks in the group that identify themselves as extroverts, and the pandemic was particularly difficult for them," adding, "Working from home really changed their sense of activity with other people. Conversations were cut. Anything social was just gone out of their lives." Wood said, "But even one of the litigators started again working in person. Their mental health challenges did not evaporate. In some cases, they got worse." Eric Wood noted, "When people started returning to the offices, attorneys in particular were just starting to fall apart," adding, "Substance use for many really went out of control over the two-year period. Depressive disorders also are on the rise." Eric Wood added, "Still, despite the mounting concerns and the novelty of meeting virtually, the support groups appear to work. People who previously might not have driven 2 hours to attend a support group could now do so from the comfort of their homes." Eric Wood added, "The Connections Group has created its own kind of sense of community. We have had people that came in when a crisis was particularly relevant for them, and then things settled down, and then they stopped coming to group, but it's really met a need." Once COVID restrictions eased, Eric Wood and his colleagues considered stopping the Connections Group or meeting less regularly, but participants asked to keep the same schedule. After many people had stopped worrying about COVID, Diane Keller Wood, a hearing aid attendant, contracted the virus in February of 2022, despite remaining vigilant about wearing a face mask. And then she developed long COVID symptoms, including difficulty breathing, fatigue, brain fog, loss of balance, and eye twitching. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, almost 1 in 5 U.S. adults who have had COVID continued to have long COVID symptoms in June. Diane Keller Wood has seen a long list of providers, including an ear, nose and throat doctor, a neurologist, a physical therapist, a psychiatrist, and an ophthalmologist. According to a study conducted at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri, for about a month he experienced suicidal ideation, which is more common among people who have had COVID. Diane Keller Wood described it as the worst despair you have ever been through, with really no reason. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali, clinical epidemiologist at Washington University, who has studied the impact of the virus and long COVID on people's mental health, said, "People with COVID-19 unfortunately have a much higher risk of having mental health issues." She said the psychiatrist prescribed Diane Keller Wood a mood stabilizer, which helped me tremendously. Keller Wood also connected with a member of a COVID survivors support group who recommended she try the over-the-counter drugs Pepcid and Zyrtec, which studies have shown can help with some COVID symptoms. She said they helped ease Keller Wood's brain fog, but some days she still has trouble forming words. She said, "If I can just have quality of life and see some improvement, I think I will remain positive, but I don't know what my life is going to look like 10 years down the road." Another challenge is a lack of therapists and psychiatrists. According to Kaiser Family Foundation data, more than a quarter of the U.S. population lives in an area where there is a shortage of mental health providers. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali said, "To address the swell of mental health problems, we need to be creative." He said that could mean the healthcare system forming support groups and social workers providing mental health care. Dr. Ziad Al-Ali added, the government has to do a whole lot more, and also the public has to be aware of this and restore some social ties and restore some sense of normalcy of checking on each other. Tim Bostwick, an opera singer and doctoral candidate in music at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, is working on a creative solution for his post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. He had never had significant anxiety or depression before being hospitalized for COVID in spring of 2021 and developing long COVID symptoms. He also developed nodules on his vocal folds, which prevented him from singing for 6 months. He said, since recovering from COVID, I woke up with nightmares almost nightly, most of them being back in the hospital. But his mental health has improved because of medications and cognitive behavioral therapy. In public, Bostwick used to panic when he saw others not wearing face masks. He is now preparing to perform for the first time since the pandemic began. He'll be singing at Chicago Fringe Opera. He said, losing my voice was like losing an old friend, and we're not the same. We're never going to be the same. There's no going back to normal. He added, but it's like getting to know an old friend again.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.